Hi, I'm VOA's Alexis Strope with your worldwide news update. Syria's new authorities on Thursday launched a security crackdown in a coastal region vowing to pursue remnants of the ousted Bashar al-Assad government accused in an attack the day before that killed 14 security police. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan has more.
The attack on the police has marked the deadliest challenge yet to the Sunni Islamist-led authorities, led by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, which swept Assad from power on December 8. Reflecting tensions with a sectarian edge, protests also erupted in several cities on Wednesday, seen in a video verified by Reuters after an undated video showing the burning of an Alawite shrine in Aleppo emerged on social media. Members of the Alawite minority, an offshoot of Shiite Islam, wielded huge sway during decades of Assad's iron-fisted rule. The Syrian Information Ministry declared a ban on what it described as the circulation or publication of any media content or news with a sectarian tone aimed at spreading division. Assad's longtime Shiite regional ally Iran on Thursday rejected accusations that Tehran was interfering in Syria. It follows a warning by the new Syrian foreign minister for the Islamic Republic not to spread chaos in his country.
That was Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. A new round of Israeli airstrikes in Yemen targeted the Houthi rebel-held capital of Sana'a and multiple ports. The World Health Organization's director general said Thursday's bombardment took place just meters away as he was about to board a flight in Sana'a. The strikes followed several days of Houthi attacks and missile and drone launches that set off sirens in Israel. Israel's military says it attacked infrastructure used by the Houthis at the airport in Sana'a, power stations, and ports. It later said it had not been aware that the WHO chief was at the airport in Yemen. At least three people were reported killed and dozens injured in the Sana'a airport strike. This is VOA News. Aviation experts suspect the crash of an Azerbaijani plane in Kazakhstan was caused by Russian air defense systems. AP correspondent Rika Ann Garcia reports.
A day after an Azerbaijani airliner has crashed in Kazakhstan, aviation experts say the plane most likely went down after being hit by Russian air defense systems. Azerbaijani Airlines Embraer 190 was en route from Baku to the Russian city of Grozny in the North Caucasus region. The Russian Civil Aviation Authority preliminary information indicated the pilots diverted to Aktau after a bird strike led to an emergency on board. However, some aviation experts say that the holes seen in the plane's tail section likely indicate that it could have come under fire from Russian air defense systems, fending off a Ukrainian drone attack. I'm Rika Ann Garcia.
Ukraine's military intelligence says North Korean troops are suffering heavy losses in Russia's Kursk region and face logistical difficulties because of Ukrainian attacks. The intelligence agency said Thursday that Ukrainian strikes near Novoyanovka inflicted heavy casualties on North Korean units. Ukraine's president said earlier this week that 3,000 North Korean troops had been killed and wounded in the fighting in the Kursk region. It marked the first significant estimate by Ukraine of North Korean casualties several weeks after Kyiv announced that North Korea had sent 10,000 to 12,000 troops to Russia to help it in the almost three-year war. A Nigerian military jet pursuing bandits bombed villagers instead. VOA's Christina Manenti reports.
At least 10 people were killed and several wounded when a Nigerian military fighter jet pursuing bandits in two villages allegedly mistakenly bombed civilians in the northwestern state of Sokoto on Wednesday, according to its governor. They added that the state will collaborate with other authorities to investigate the military operation that killed people in the villages of Gidansama and Rintua in the Sarame local government area. There is widespread insecurity in northwest Nigeria, while a 15-year Islamist insurgency has plagued the northeast of the country, and gang and separatist violence affects the southeast. Christina Manenti, VOA News.
Finnish police say authorities detained a ship linked to neighboring Russia as they investigate whether it damaged a Baltic Sea power cable and several data cables. It was the latest incident involving disruption of key infrastructure. Police and border guards boarded the Eagle S and took control Thursday as they investigated damage to the Estlink 2 undersea power cable that brings electricity from Finland to Estonia across the Baltic Sea. The cable went down on Wednesday. The incidents followed damage to two data cables and the Nord Stream gas pipelines. Both have been termed sabotage. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Friday, December 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. December 27th, the head of an African regional bloc offers help to Mozambique as it grapples with post-election unrest.
South Africa calls on all parties to commit to an urgent dialogue that will heal the country and set it on a new political and developmental trajectory.
A look back at the catastrophic tsunami that hit East Africa and Indonesia 20 years ago.
Sadiq would have been 26 years old, but 20 years ago, he and his mother, Sauda, were swept inland by a vicious tsunami which separated them.
And a rights group says about 30 migrants died each day trying to reach Spain this past year. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who heads a powerful regional bloc, has said that the group is ready to assist the African nation Mozambique as it deals with post-election violence, which has claimed more than 100 lives. Demonstrators say the election was stolen. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
In a statement, Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, current chairman of the 16-nation Southern African Development Community, SADC, said the post-election violence in Mozambique must end after the country's Constitutional Council this week gave 65% victory of the October election to the ruling Frelimo Party. Ronald Lomola, South Africa's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, released an audio message on social media weighing in on post-election violence in Mozambique.
South Africa calls on all parties to commit to an urgent dialogue that will heal the country and set it on a new political and developmental trajectory. Furthermore, South Africa is ready to assist Mozambique in any manner to facilitate this dialogue.
So did Venancio Mondlane, Mozambique's run-up to the Frelimo's Daniel Francisco Chapo in the disputed October presidential election. He said, "We are not focused on our brother who is suffering, who has been massacred by Frelimo. That's not our focus. If you want change in the country, a revolution, my brothers, let's defend the shops of our neighbors, companies of our neighbors. Let's defend them." Kanyo Farise, Amnesty International Deputy Regional Director for East and Southern Africa, urged the Mozambique government to end what she called one of the worst crackdowns on protesters.
Since the outcome of the elections on 9 October, police have responded with excessive use of force against those who decide to express themselves and to exercise their right to freedom of association and assembly. We've seen police using live ammunition, using rubber bullets, and using various forms of excessive force against protesters. Many people have been seriously wounded, and over 110 people have been killed.
Borges Namir, a researcher with the Institute for Security Studies, says peace is important so the country's closed ports can open to service countries like Zimbabwe, Zambia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Malawi, and South Africa.
So nothing is happening. Everything has been paralyzed in Mozambique. It means that people will face more hardship even after this is over. But the fastest way to solve this problem is dialogue. There is no alternative to dialogue.
With the opposition and regional organizations such as SADC and Africa Union now calling for peace in Mozambique, there is hope that the situation can change. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
With the spread of false information on social media, journalists in Mozambique are on the front lines in the fight against mis- and disinformation. Amaryllis Goulet has this report from Maputo.
Here in the Evidences newsroom in Maputo, Mozambique, Reginaldo Chambul and his team are working to set the record straight in a bid to combat misinformation and disinformation. He and his colleague Nelson Mukanzi say they co-founded the print and digital news outlet 4 years ago because many other organizations were not fact-checking or using data and analysis in their reporting. Chambuli says their audience quickly took off.
Journal Evidences,
the Evidences newspaper may have gained greater visibility.
greater prominence in such a short space of time because of the way we approach journalism itself.
Nós, a nível do
we once
jornal
had a page where we fact-checked the main news stories circulating
uma
on social media.
Do jornal, em que fazíamos, fact-check.
This year, Chambula reported on why Usuf Obumadi, the leader of RENAMO, Mozambique's main opposition party, had not been seen in public in the first week during the presidential campaign. Evidências began investigating a photo on the candidate's Facebook page that appeared to suggest that Momad was working on a mission abroad.
Já tivemos contacto com algum,
we already
algumas ferramentas
with
de
some image verification
de imagem.
Tools.
Pegamos na
we
imagem,
took the image and put
no,
it into the software and found that no, the image had been published on the same page in 2019.
E verificamos
that was the change
que,
of narrative
contas,
that could have
tinha sido publicada na mesma página em 2019.
With the spread of false information on social media, the Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA, Mozambique's journalist Armando Nyantumbu says that investing in technology is needed on newsrooms to train journalists on how to combat mis and disinformation.
Thanks to technology, we have greater access to information, and we are able to participate more and more in governance issues, for example, which was difficult 30 years ago. What is happening is that, alongside these advantages, there are disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is precisely disinformation.
Este fenômeno da desinformação.
MISA Mozambique provide fact-checking service and trained journalists, Nyantumbu says.
Existe no espaço digital.
There are digital tools that help us to do this, and we at MISA Mozambique have been organizing training for journalism students, for journalists and civil society on how to use these platforms.
Para estudantes de jornalismo, treinamentos para jornalistas.
As society relies more on social media for information, media advocates says the work of groups like Evidencias in MISA Mozambique will be a powerful tool in accurately and objectively informing the public. Amarilis Gule, VOA Africa, Maputo, Mozambique.
Nigerian authorities in northwest Sokoto state are investigating a Christmas Day airstrike by the military that killed at least 10 people. The military has denied targeting civilians during the operation, saying it was going after a new military sect. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
According to a statement Thursday, Sokoto State Governor Ahmed Aliyu says he's in talks with the Nigerian army to ensure a thorough investigation into the circumstances that led to the airstrike. Early Wednesday, the military launched an airstrike it said targeted the terror group Lakurawa in the villages of Gidan, Sama, and Rumtua. But Governor Aliyu said the attack, quote, claimed the lives of innocent citizens, end quote. State authorities said 10 people were killed and many others injured. Aliyu extended his condolences to the affected families and pledged to support them with cash and food items. The incident is the latest in a series of accidental strikes in recent years, raising concerns among human rights groups, including Amnesty International. Isa Sanusi is Amnesty's country director in Nigeria.
This is yet another sign that the Nigerian military has not changed and they have not learned a lesson from previous attacks or airstrikes that kill civilians. I believe that they have to review their procedures. They have to investigate this incident thoroughly. And they have to find a way to end this reckless, deadly use of force. Within the space of just 1 or 2 years, at least 3 major incidents have happened.
The military said in a statement Wednesday that it did not target civilians and that it took necessary measures to avoid such accidents. The Nigerian Air Force says it will investigate the casualties. Nigeria has been waging deadly wars against terrorists, armed gangs, and separatists for years, but accidents have been recurring. Last December, a military airstrike that hit Tundumbiri Village in northern Kaduna State killed more than 120 people. And in September, another airstrike in Kaduna killed 24 people. Nigerian authorities have promised to be more courteous, but in a Christmas Day broadcast, the Nigerian Air Staff Chief Hassan Abubakar had this to say.
To every member of the Nigerian Air Force family, I want to especially thank you for your unwavering dedication, resilience, and sacrifice in service of our great nation. Your commitment and professionalism have been instrumental in ensuring the security and stability of our beloved country.
In November, Nigerian authorities announced the emergence of the Lakurawa sect in the northwest and said security forces were already tracking the group's activities. Nigerians are hopeful this is the last time an airstrike will hit civilians instead of militants, but many dread a repeat of the tragedy seen on Christmas Day. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
20 years ago, a devastating tsunami hit East Africa and Indonesia along the Indian Ocean. More than 300 people were killed in Africa alone, and thousands were displaced in Tanzania, Somalia, and Kenya. As the region commemorates the catastrophic event, which followed an earthquake, experts say improved early warning systems can help prevent loss of life in the future. In Indonesia, the tsunami tore a woman's 6-year-old son from her arms. Reuters correspondent Lauren Cook has her story.
Sadiq would have been 26 years old, but 20 years ago, he and his mother, Sauda, were swept inland by a vicious tsunami which separated them. She lost Sadiq.
This is the mosque where I was separated from Sadiq. And the house next to the mosque I was rescued at.
Sauda, who like many Indonesians goes by one name, says she vividly remembers the sound of the rumbling earth when a 9.1 magnitude earthquake struck the Indian Ocean on Boxing Day in 2004. The tsunami killed 230,000 people across the coastlines of India, Sri Lanka, Thailand, and Indonesia, making it one of the deadliest disasters in recorded history.
When the quake happened, my children scattered out from the house, and I told them to run towards the mosque. I did not run. As I heard a rumbling noise, I lay down holding Sadiq tight. And I thought it was just the wind. I prayed to God and asked him what was happening. And then I came back to my house when suddenly I saw the wave approaching like a snake.
She says she remembers holding on to Sadiq tightly while shouting at her 7 other children to run. In the aftermath, Sauda was reunited with only 6 of her children, as well as then 6-year-old Sadiq. Her 20-year-old Titan was never found. The family accepted the fact that she was one of the victims of the tsunami and was buried in a mass graveyard. But over the years, Sauda and her family have held on to the hope that Sadiq is still alive and would find his way back to them.
If he is still alive and I'm still alive, I want him to come home and for us to see each other before I die. But if he is gone, I wholeheartedly accept that that is God's will. But I still believe he is alive. We don't know. Only God knows. If he is alive, please tell him to come home and see me before I die. That is my wish if he is still alive.
That is Reuters correspondent Lauren Cook reporting. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for James Buddy in Washington. Today is Friday, December 27th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Coming up on our program, a new way to cut down on the tons of plastic waste we produce each year. More on that later.
A Spanish migration rights group says in a report released on Thursday that more than 10,000 migrants died while trying to reach Spain by sea this year. On average, that means 30 migrants died each day this year attempting to reach the country by boat, according to Comandante Frontreras of Walking Borders. Overall deaths rose 58% compared to last year, the report added. Tens of thousands of migrants left West Africa in 2024 for the Canary Islands, a Spanish territory close to the African coast that has increasingly been used as a stepping stone to continental Europe. A wave of Israeli airstrikes hit Yemen's main airport on Thursday, just as the World Health Organization's director general said he was about to board a flight there. One of the UN plane's crew was wounded, said the WHO director general, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
Our experience in Yemen shows that even in protracted crisis, it's both possible and necessary to provide humanitarian assistance in a way that doesn't just alleviate suffering, but contributes to restoring health services. This way of working bridges the artificial divide between humanitarian and development work and contributes to peace building.
That's WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. The Israeli military said it attacked the infrastructure used by Yemen's Houthi rebels at the international airport in the capital Sana'a, as well as power stations and ports, alleging they were used to smuggle in Iranian weapons and for the entry of senior Iranian officials. Last week, Israeli jets bombed Sana'a and Hodeida, killing 9 people. The U.S. military also has targeted the Houthis in Yemen in recent days. The promised effort by President-elect Donald Trump to remake the U.S. government is set to encompass one of the country's premier law enforcement and intelligence agencies. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden reports.
It's an announcement that took many by surprise. FBI Director Christopher Wray telling employees he'll step down when President-elect Donald Trump takes office.
This is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray.
And he shared some final orders.
What absolutely, positively cannot, must not change is our commitment to doing the right thing in the right way every time.
But change is coming.
Meetings went wonderful.
Kash Patel, picked by Trump to lead the FBI even before Wray announced plans to cut his 10-year term short, meeting with lawmakers and making his case for confirmation. The 44-year-old Patel is a former public defender and federal prosecutor who served as a national security advisor and at the Pentagon during Trump's first term. John Fortier with the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank in Washington.
I think what really makes him attractive to Trump is, again, that he saw what he thought and that the President Trump thought were abuses of the Justice Department, the FBI in particular, going out, perhaps investigating where they shouldn't have.
Something Patel has been willing to say out loud.
I am honored to be here in support of Donald J. Trump. He is being victimized, but we as a country are being victimized even more by the unconstitutional weaponization of justice.
Patel's wild opponents by saying he would shut down the Bureau's headquarters in Washington, reduce the FBI's surveillance powers, and cut the size of the Bureau's intelligence operations. He's also called for annihilating the deep state, and in his 2023 book, Government Gangsters, listed 60 officials who have disagreed with Trump. Again, AEI's John Fortier.
Some of the changes that he might want to make, he can do it with tone or with some changes in personnel, but if he really does want to make these significant changes, that's going to take, you know, more work from the executive and the legislative branch, something that takes a little longer that he can't do all by himself.
Kash Patel, according to Trump, is the man to at least get it started. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
Now, for all our listeners celebrating the holiday season and the new year, we have a greeting from Accra, Ghana, brought to us by journalist Prince Benjamin.
I hope you all at Voice of America will have merry, bright and cheerful Christmas, and I wish you Happy New Year, full of joy and blessings. You all at Voice of America and listeners around the world, happiness ahead of the new year.
For all of our listeners, we wish you a peaceful, prosperous 2025. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Carol. We'll begin the sport with some cricket news. Pakistan fought back to restrict South Africa to 82 for 3 wickets at the close of the opening day of the first test after being bowled out for 211 at Centurion on Thursday. Both teams elected to play all seam bowling attacks on the bowler-friendly wickets, and it was the home side's change pair of Doane Patterson and Cabin Botch who did the damage after South Africa won the toss and put the Vixers into bat. South Africa needs to win one of the two test matches against Pakistan to seal a place in next June's World Test Championship finals at Lord's. The test is the first of two, with the second at Newlands in Cape Town, South Africa, starting on January the 3rd. In athletics, the 2025 Africa Under 18 Under 20 Athletics Championships will now take place in Oran, Algeria in April 2025. The agreement in principle was given in Triana by the Minister of Sports and the President of the Algerian Athletics Federation. The CAA conference will also be held in Oran before the championships. In football news, we turn our attention to the English Premier League, where Liverpool strengthened their grip at the top of the English Premier League after coming from behind to defeat struggling Leicester City and move 7 points clear on Thursday. Egyptian international Mohamed Salah scored in the 82nd minute as Liverpool secured a 3-1 victory over Leicester City. The former Africa Footballer of the Year in this season has been involved in 27 goals in 17 Premier League games, just one fewer than he was in 32 appearances last season. His goal on Thursday was his 100th home goal in the Premier League, making him the 8th player to reach this milestone.
The most important thing is we need to stay humble. That year, I think we had a few injuries when we were ahead, and we lose it in the end. But hopefully, we carry on like that and no injury, then we just go and win. But this one is very special. Hopefully, we win the Premier League with it. For this club is something I'm very, very proud. I dream of. So I really want to win the Premier League this year.
In volleyball news, the Namibia Volleyball Federation has held 2024 as a landmark year for the sport, marked by significant milestones and achievements. Speaking during a year in review, the Namibia Volleyball President Tobias Mwatuelo highlighted key developments reshaping volleyball in the country.
Top of the list, it's actually the introduction of the National League, of which we had for the first time in Namibia, probably to say, because like we said back then in 2004, 2009, it was just more of a national league, but not a league, because it was just only a few teams from two regions. Now we are looking about teams from all regions within Namibia.
And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Carol, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Friday, December 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us and hope you have a peaceful weekend. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday morning.
VOA Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in brief, airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in brief, your trusted source for news.
Hello, this is Linoch Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30.